Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, the podcast where we delve into the world of CMS systems and their crucial role in website and web content development. In each episode, we'll explore the reasons why founders, CEOs, CTOs, and CMOs of web content development companies need CMS systems to thrive in the digital landscape. Get ready to uncover the secrets behind successful website management, content creation, and seamless user experiences. Here's your host, Jonathan Ames.
Welcome to Cutting Edge Web Content Development, a podcast by Better CMS. Here we share insights on the intersection of content and web development, and how you can align these two often competing forces to improve efficiency and business results. Joining us on this episode is George Shutter. He's an SEO expert, and we're glad to have him here talking about how to apply SEO in your particular situation, avoid some of the pitfalls that are out there. Especially if you're new to SEO, I think George is going to help you understand how to interact with it. Thanks, George.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. Great to be here.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit first just about your career so people know a little bit about you. What are some projects you've worked on in SEO that you're particularly proud of?
So I started out with my own website. I became interested in SEO around the time I was at college, university, and actually just started it as a hobby to try and rank my own things on Google and learn what I could do and learn how the whole thing worked. I then kind of used that to shop around for actual SEO jobs and to start a career. Eventually got a startup to say yes, and so I worked with them for a while. But I think the real powerful kind of thing that really developed me as an SEO is I actually started working at an agency, one of the largest specialist agencies in the UK. And I was very fortunate because that opened me up to a ton of different brands, a ton of different industries, and it really helped me train my skills and develop. So I guess the ones I'm most proud of, firstly, Intuit QuickBooks. We worked on them. That was very heavily technical focused, huge website. It's quite complex and also reasonably difficult subject matter for someone who's not very good at kind of math or finance. So that was really interesting to get into. And then also other e-commerce projects. So we have a company in the UK called Decathlon. They're big, or in Europe, it's a big sportswear brand. So kind of getting to work with a really large team over there on particularly content and e-commerce SEO. And then I'd say also the last one is whilst I was working at the agency, I continued to sort of build my own projects in the background and continued trying to learn how to put content strategies. And that, I'd say I'm particularly proud of that one because it puts you in the client's shoes and it makes you understand fundamentally what it's like to be a business owner and what it's like to kind of understand overhead and managing staff and all that kind of stuff. And that makes you empathize a lot more, even if you're working with a much bigger scale brand.
Yeah, absolutely. There's nothing like working for yourself, trying to make it work for yourself. You really learn to empathize with the person on the other side.
Yeah.
Who's trying to get some results out of this. Maybe doesn't understand all of the ways that you could do that.
Absolutely.
So let's switch to some of your strategic ideas here. Talk about some essentials that you'll need to consider. Like if somebody out there is building a content strategy, what are two essentials that they've got to really think of when they're building that out for SEO?
I'd say first and foremost, the first thing you need to think about is the strategic objectives of the company or the client that you're working for. I think with any other kind of marketing or business strategy, it absolutely needs to be robustly aligned to the strategic objectives of the business. I think a big mistake that people make when they first approach SEO is it's so easy to get too bogged down in the minutiae and the technical side, and you start going down these rabbit holes of, we need to optimize the metadata and the heading tags and the canonical tags. And you kind of just focus on the technical side and you forget the actual core goal of what you're trying to achieve with the campaign. And you need to take a step back and essentially remember that your job as an SEO is to seamlessly integrate into the wider, not only the wider marketing strategy, but also the wider corporate strategy of the business and how other channels are performing. So instead of focusing on just your channel in kind of isolation, you might look at what else is going on in the business and you might think, hey, this client actually has a super successful, let's say, a newsletter, right, that they pump out every week. It gets tons of repeat business. It gets tons of conversions and it really helps build customer loyalty. Well, if you're just focused on kind of the bubble of SEO, you're going to be thinking, okay, how can we convert people straight from search and how can we try and make those metrics look good? When actually it might be, how can we get people onto the newsletter? And although they might not be directly converting from search, you can still tangibly prove to the client that you've made a big impact on one of their key objectives that year. I think the second thing would probably be like the customer journey, which kind of follows on. You know, if you're too bogged down in the technical side and you're thinking, okay, topical questions and search volume and all that kind of thing, you really want to focus on the customer profile, kind of person is actually on the other side of the screen, and what are the key touch points that are going to actually lead to conversion. So if we take an example of, say, a company that does raw dog food, you know, it's very trendy these days. People buy these monthly subscriptions and they sign up to get raw food to feed to their dog. If someone's interested in feeding that kind of product to their dog, that prospective customer is going to type 20 plus things into Google before they actually go to convert. They're going to say, what is it? What's the benefits? Can I feed it to this dog? How often do I need to feed it? It's going to be a whole list of things that they need to go down. And it's really focusing on that unique journey that that prospective customer will go on, rather than just kind of targeting any topic that's loosely related to the industry. You know, I mean, you might take a keyword like the best raw dog food for Labradors, like a super kind of niche subject. A lot of people overlook that because it might only have 110 searches a month, but that person who's making a search that specific may be so close to the point of conversion. And that's the thing you need to keep in mind, rather than how close are they to the actual revenue, rather than how high is the search volume from kind of a technical and strategy perspective. So I guess those are the two things I'd really want to focus on: the strategic objectives and the unique touch points of the customer.
Yeah, excellent. I think what happens is most people, when they think of SEO, they only think there's one objective, which is traffic.
Yeah.
It's like, I just want traffic, and SEO is how I get traffic. But there's a much larger picture, like you just painted, of what do you want the traffic to do and what are they trying to do? And then aligning those two, what they're trying to do and what the company's trying to do together into some content. That's more of that strategy in SEO, less about search volumes.
Yeah, I guess one thing is important to remember is sometimes traffic can actually be a vanity metric as well. It's if something might not get a ton of traffic, but it might convert very well. And ultimately, the client wants to see kind of money in the bank rather than a ton of traffic and no tangible results. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying.
Yes, yes. No, it is actually that traffic and search engine ranking are often very much vanity metrics. And very few SEOs out there, I think, focus on the idea of conversions. What conversions do we get from organic? And how do those conversions compare to traffic from other sources, maybe paid or referrals or things like that? So as far as someone who is new to this space, they're listening to you, they're like, this sounds great. How would you guide them through an SEO proposal? They may be thinking, all right, now I'm going to go out to an agency, get a proposal or several proposals. How do you guide them through evaluating that and making sure that they get something successful in the end?
Sure. I think one of the most kind of underrated skills with this, especially in an industry that's complex and kind of jargon filled, is the ability to tell a really captivating story. I know you've spoken about this previously on the podcast, but if you can turn your proposal into a captivating story, that is going to be immensely powerful, because stories are far more engaging than just kind of a bunch of dry factual information and kind of running through a proposal that's on a PowerPoint or a spreadsheet. Stories are something that's been ingrained in our culture as human beings for centuries and centuries and centuries, and it helps deliver the kind of core message of that proposal in a much more memorable and a powerful way. It's also a really good match for proposals, because good stories generally focus around the themes of conflict and then like a resolution to that conflict. And that marries up so well with the idea of a proposal, because their conflict is that they're not converting very well from organic. And the resolution to that is the proposal. So it kind of goes hand in hand, and you get a double whammy of not only is it going to be extremely memorable and powerful, but it also plays into that memorable, powerful message very well. And I think every time, if someone's new to the space and someone doesn't have all the kind of technical know-how of how it's working, whether you're doing a pitch or you're updating someone on a proposal via email or you're having a call with a client, I think it's important to think, how am I going to tell the next chapter of this story? How am I going to tell the next sort of bit of the story of where we continue to drive rankings, where we grow the success of the business, where we make this a really successful operation. And I think when you're telling your story, you always want to focus on making sure the client has a fundamental understanding and they actually know full well what's happening and why it's happening and how it ties back to what they're actually trying to do. So you want to convey, it's not about showing off how much you know from a technical perspective. It's just about walking them through the goal you're trying to achieve. So instead of just saying, hey, we've put this strategy together, it's a ton of blog content and this will build SERP dominance and topical authority, and you're throwing the jargon at them and that they don't actually understand, okay, this, they could be just sort of throwing snake oil at me here. The way to approach that, say if we're using the raw dog food example again, is you'd go to your customer, your client, and you'd say, hey, we noticed from looking into your business that your prospective customers really value the health of their pets and they really love their pets and they want to make a really important investment in this dog's well-being. However, that means that they're going to carry out a ton of research on how the product works and how much it's going to cost and make sure that they definitely fully understand things before they commit to this. We want to make sure that you're in front of that prospective customer from the very first search that they make, because we know your company has been in business for 10 years. You're one of the first people to start marketing this. And we want to prove that, and we want to prove that to your prospective customers before any of your competitors have a chance to kind of do that before you do. And it's telling that story. So you're fundamentally explaining what we're trying to do and how it's going to work and the fact that the customer might need a certain number of interactions with the brand before they'll convert. But you're telling it in a story and you're fundamentally tying it back to their objectives.
Mm-hmm. I think that also is one of the misunderstandings of SEO, is that people tend to think of it as just putting keywords into product information.
Yeah.
Rather than using the keywords to create a skeleton to a story that's that customer journey, really. And I think one of the reasons that happens, because a lot of times when people are thinking of SEO, they're just looking at their competitors and saying, I want to be like this competitor, but ahead of them.
Yeah.
So I want more traffic or higher in the search. That brings us down to a tactical level. So how do you approach this competitor research and apply these ideas without just copying the competition?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point, because if you really want to stand out, you always don't want to copy the competition. I think in any market you're going to be in, particularly in a market that's very competitive, you need to stand out from the crowd and try and do something different or disruptive if you want to succeed. If you're too similar and people are looking at the Google results and it's five different companies that are all saying the same thing and all doing the same thing, it's very quickly going to turn into a race to the bottom. And it's really the only thing you're going to be able to set yourself apart on is price. And whoever's the cheapest is actually going to win the contract or the product or the sale. If you are able to come up with something unique and attack the market in a unique way, you're going to be able to leverage, or you're going to have a lot more leverage rather, to increase your margin, to build customer loyalty, to upsell them on different products, because they're more invested in your brand and you've attacked it from an angle that no one else is doing. And that's actually setting you apart. So it's not really about doing what your customers are doing every single time, but it's more looking at what they're not doing. This other competitor might have targeted a certain funnel, or they might rank really well for a certain keyword, like best dog foods for whatever, Labradors or Golden Retrievers. But they might not have actually built the whole funnel out, or they might not be sort of moving people onto another channel like the newsletter that we talked about. And that's actually a way that you can get one up on the competitor without just sort of copying their strategy. Now, there will be times, of course, where you do need to compete on the same terms. Competitors are ranking really well for something and you want to take that traffic away from them. That can be effective, but you still need to ask yourself, how are we actually going to stand out and we're going to set ourselves apart? So we're in that position to upsell. So we're in that position to build loyalty and to actually get people with us for the long haul. So that might be, if you're writing the same landing page or a blog post, you want to take a totally different angle on the research or the core message of what you're trying to get across to that customer. You might want to do something different with your branding. You might want to move them on to a more effective channel, like a social media channel, or you could even go that extra kind of level with providing maybe a free coaching call or a lead magnet. It's about, if you are having to compete on the same sort of terms, it's really about understanding how you can be more valuable and how you can set yourself apart so it doesn't quickly descend into a race to the bottom. So that's probably what I'd recommend.
Well, look at those competitors, try to find out what they're doing and see either where the segments are that they're not fully attacking or simply try to attack the same segment, but take it from a different angle.
Yeah, totally.
Excellent. All right. Well, one of the things that's been in everybody's ear this last year is AI. So do you suggest any tactics? Do you suggest using AI at all in your SEO? And if so, how would you integrate that into a content strategy?
I think AI is an amazingly powerful tool and it's impossible to get away from it. And it's literally this generation's version of the Industrial Revolution. Our world is fundamentally changing. The way the world works is fundamentally changing. And I think that we have to lean into it and we have to leverage it if we want to sort of move with the times. If we look at it, a content strategy, I think a lot of people will look at it as, okay, we can use a large language model like ChatGPT to write blog posts or to write service pages, and that's where it sort of ends. You really want to focus on how can we use AI either side of that to actually streamline the whole process. So one thing you actually can do to inform your content strategy is you can use something like a social media monitoring tool, like, say, for example, Hootsuite, which will actually pick up on mentions and it will flag alerts of what people are discussing, how people are interpreting your product, how people are interpreting the wider industry. And you can then use that to get real customer data and real prospective data and how you can actually tie that in to better target your customers. What you can also do is you can use things like, you can use either a large language model or just some kind of like demographic profiling tool to make you better understand kind of not only who is coming to your website, but how they're actually behaving. And that will give you a better oversight of the key touch points of the funnel. And it's not just about creating content with AI, it's understanding how can we better educate our audience and how can we better sort of target the right demographic of people to sell your product or service. Then when it comes to creating the content, especially if you're using a popular tool such as ChatGPT, you want to streamline the whole process and you want to have like a really robust SOP. So don't just use it to write the content. It's actually really good for research as well. So you can put in a huge white paper as a PDF now into ChatGPT and just say, hey, give me the key points of this. Or you can treat it like an expert. You can go back and forth and say, I don't understand this. Here's a white paper. And you can have a conversational kind of interaction with it so you can better understand the subject rather than having to read the whole thing. And that will make the research a lot faster and it will drive the cost down of actually creating that piece of content. The other thing with that is you want to make sure you have a really robust set of SOPs and prompts. So you want to make sure that you have prompts that you can use with the AI that are tried and tested that people can put in. It's going to make sure you have consistent quality content and it's going to make sure that the content's produced as efficiently as possible. And then once you get into the post writing phase and you've done the writing and the editing, you can then actually use it for optimization. So another thing you could do with something like ChatGPT is you can actually post Google's helpful content guidance into ChatGPT and you can post your blog post and you can say, hey, I want you to tell me based on these guidelines, how much or how well rather this content adheres to these guidelines. And it will give you actionable advice. And that's another way that you can really use AI to expedite the content strategy. So I think if you just kind of look outside of the realm of just creating the content, there's actually a lot that you can really do to streamline the whole process end to end.
Oh, that's excellent. Any tips on places where people could find some of these well-written prompts, maybe who are newer to AI for research and stuff?
Yeah. I've actually just started learning myself. I think one thing I would recommend that will naturally help with your prompt engineering is learning how the tools work in a fundamental way. You know, the fact that these tools are trained on a huge data set of text and that they don't actually know anything. They're just predicting the next token in a sequence. Once you get a fundamental understanding of how these tools work, you naturally start to engage with them in a totally different way. And I think the one tip I'll give you on being successful with large language models is you must leave nothing up to interpretation. You have to use incredibly specific language. So say, for example, yes, I want you to write numbers out in full, as in if you write the number 10, instead of writing 10, it writes T-E-N. If you say in full, that can be open to interpretation because the AI might think, well, by in full, does it mean I need to generate a 1 and a 0 instead of just a 1 or instead of nothing at all? So a better choice would be to use a phrase like WordForm, because there's absolutely no way the AI can interpret anything other than what you actually intend. So that's probably, if you are just able to be extremely specific and explicit in your instructions, you've already nailed half of prompt engineering. So that's what I'd say.
What's interesting is years ago, I worked with freelancers who were overseas, so often in India or other parts of the world, on various projects. And I found really it's the same if you're trying to convert to another language. You really have to be, or even another culture, you have to be very, very in, you have to have a lot of intent behind all your words, be very clear in the way you phrase them. Think about it and say, is there any way that this could be misconstrued or not be clear? So really learning how to communicate cross cultures, cross languages is the same as what makes for good prompt engineering. What I found in my particular past.
Yeah, I totally agree. I totally understand that's transferable skills from the old way of doing it.
Yes, it is. Tell us a few things, you know, in your career history. I always like to ask this, what people would do if they could go back in a time machine to the very beginning of their career, speak to themselves, give themselves one piece of advice. What might that be that could have helped you at the beginning of your career that you know now?
I think I would say, don't feel so bad when you get things wrong or when you get a bad email from a client or when a project goes a little bit pear-shaped and people aren't happy with the results. Because fundamentally, it's only by failing and getting things wrong and sort of not understanding that you're actually going to learn anything. And it's all part of the journey. You're not going to get it perfect every time. And you might feel really bad, but that's actually what's going to help you learn and develop. I think the best way, especially to learn SEO, is really to learn by doing. And you can read as much theory as you want, but it's not until you actually try and rank a bunch of different websites in a bunch of different industries and make mistakes that you're going to learn anything. So I guess the advice to me 5-6 years ago would be, don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid to get things wrong. You will get things wrong, but that's how you're going to learn and it will all be okay. I think the other thing I'd probably say is just make sure that you, I would always say to any SEO, one thing that I think I did right is always try and focus on your own project. If you can rank your own website on Google and you kind of have your own project, you're going to fundamentally think about it in a different way too if you're working on a client site and you really get that context. And although it's something I did do, it's something that I would definitely say, make sure you carry on with that, because it's only through doing your own project that you're actually going to think about the industry in a totally different way.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. In fact, even if you are an experienced SEO, the only way to continue growing your ability is to try new things and fail at them, because the algorithm is constantly changing. So
yeah,
basics may be the same, but there's tweaks and what works and what doesn't over time as Google adjusts that.
Yeah, I think to be a successful SEO as well, you need to be someone who's, this is another piece of advice I give, is just you have to never be complacent. If you're inquisitive by nature and if you like the challenge and if you like learning new things and if you never quite feel that you've mastered something and you feel there's always something new to learn, this job is absolutely perfect for you, because Google will always do their best to keep you on your toes. So that's definitely something. Never get complacent with your knowledge. The world and our industry is changing by the day, especially with AI and new SaaS products coming out. So always go in as a totally open book and blank canvas and make sure that you're always open to learning and being challenged on things that you may already know and believe.
Speaking of always learning, where do you find your inspiration, George? Where's your sources of, I want to learn something new or be exposed to new ideas?
I think outside of marketing in general, it can be from anything. It can be from friends, it can be from family, and oftentimes it can be from, you see all kinds of stuff. Like you might be walking down the street and you might see a group of kids playing a game or something, and they might be super into it and they might be super open to trying new things and having a go, and if they fall over or hurt themselves, it's totally fine. And even something like that can actually really influence you and be like, you know, maybe I shouldn't take this so seriously, or maybe I shouldn't be afraid to get stuck in and fail hard and fail fast. I think in terms of industry specific, I'm always trying to learn from tons of different people and also develop knowledge, not directly within SEO, but also tangential fields. So whether it be web development or AI, or whether it be sort of content creation, I feel that, or even things like PPC or social media, I think branching outside of SEO a little bit and looking at those other channels actually informs how I kind of fit into the wider puzzle and how I can develop sort of my role. And it's always reinforcing that it's not just about trying to be a really, really good SEO. It's about making sure that you're a team player and that you're fulfilling your role in the wider business. So I think the more you understand about aspects of the business other than your own, even if it comes down to things like how people purchase products for an e-commerce business or how the warehousing and logistics works, it makes you understand how you can sort of play to your strengths and support everything else. So I guess inspiration comes from things not directly within the core subject of SEO a lot of the time.
Yeah, I think that is a great piece of advice for anyone. Whatever your specialty is, you will be better at your specialty the more you look outside the box of your specialty.
Totally.
You'll find inspiration there.
Yeah, totally agree.
Early in my career, I worked for a medical equipment company. And so medical is typically a very conservative industry. They tend to look at each other for inspiration. And so I had a lot of success simply by looking outside of the medical industry and saying, what are people in other industries doing that's successful for them? And so that really helped me at a formative time in my career. So yeah, great advice.
Yep, totally aligned with that.
Let me ask you a question. Something that comes up fairly often that non-SEOs hear is that if you want to rank better, something really important is to have good page speed. Page loads fast, you're going to have better results from that. Is that true? If it is true, what are some ways that someone could make improvements in that area of page speed?
I think page speed is actually a really misunderstood thing, and people think that it's kind of the be all and end all. If you have a bad score on page speed insights, it's automatically going to tank your ranking. And that's not necessarily true. I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is the score that Google gives you, the score on page speed insights, it's actually measured on a super weak 3G connection. And so the score is actually worse than you might think. So this is kind of okay. If someone was way out in the desert and they desperately needed to get on your site, would they be able to access it? So what I'd say is don't fixate too much on the actual score that Google gives you and just keep that in mind. What you want to do is you want to focus on fundamentally the user experience and how the average person is going to engage. So it's better to look at kind of core web vitals rather than the page speed score. So if you really want to know if your page speed is good, what I'd recommend you do is go on your cell phone, your mobile phone, put it onto 3G or 4G, go into a corner of your house or in your neighborhood where the 3G is or where the signal is not that good, go on an incognito browser and just use your site and just use it as if a customer would. If it loads fine, then you're fine. If it starts to annoy you, is probably annoying everyone else. And then you actually need to go back and do something about it. In terms of actually improving the score, luckily, there's a lot of things you can do. The most overlooked thing that a lot of people just totally miss and they drive themselves crazy going hours and hours and hours trying to improve the page speed. You've got to make sure that you're on a really good server. Because if you're on a server that doesn't have much room or if it's a shared server with a ton of different websites, that's fundamentally going to hold you back. Look at your CMS. If your CMS is bloated, if it has a lot of unnecessary things, you can always remove that. You want to make sure that you don't have anything on there that's unnecessary. There are also things that you can do is you can probably outsource this to a developer, but just making sure that if you have any heavy images or videos, you make sure you can defer those so that they load after the kind of main content. But fundamentally, I'd say don't worry too much about the score. Just try and use it on a weak signal on your phone and see how you get on. And if it loads fine, you're fine. And then you can stop recognizing over it.
Excellent. Very, very good advice. Well, if people want to get a hold of you, George, how can they reach you if they wanted to connect with you?
Yeah, sure. The best way to get in touch with me is on LinkedIn. So obviously I'm currently working as the head of SEO at Theatre Music. Feel free to reach out there. I'm always happy to answer any questions or anything that comes up. Always happy to meet new people and have a chat about anything related to web content and SEO.
Excellent. George, I really appreciate your time and your insights. You had a really good way of taking things that were complex and simplifying them, making them easy to understand, which in SEO is so important. So many people feel intimidated by it. Really appreciate those insights.
Yeah, thank you, Jonathan. I've really enjoyed it. I appreciate the opportunity.
Cutting Edge Web Content Development is brought to you by Butter CMS. To find out how you can build better with Butter, stop wasting dev time, and free your marketers from your legacy CMS, visit buttercms.com. Also, make sure to search for Cutting Edge Web Content Development in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. Make sure to click subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Butter CMS, thank you for listening.